First, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says there are at least 5 confirmed cases of the new coronavirus here in the U.S. They're expecting that number to go up. The CDC says all 5 people recently returned from the Chinese city of Wuhan, the epicenter of that outbreak. So far, at least 2,800 people have come down with a respiratory illness in China. 82 have died. Wuhan's mayor says 5 million people have already left the city. None of the U.S. cases are here in Wisconsin. 12 students and staff at UW-Platteville are being monitored for symptoms because they were recently in Wuhan. Kristen Bernard is professor of pathobiological sciences at UW-Madison. She's an expert in viruses that are transmitted between animals and people. She also worked on another coronavirus, SARS, after it showed up in 2003. Kristen, thanks a lot for coming up to the studio.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for inviting me to be here.
Well, as I listen to the CDC and public health officials, I get the tone here as this is serious, but let's not panic. Is that fair to say?
I think that's very fair. I mean, the one good thing is we learned a lot from that SARS coronavirus outbreak in 2003, and we have really excellent public health infrastructure, so I think it's no reason to panic, but it is serious.
Let's talk about a coronavirus. What is that?
So virologists classify viruses into different families, and coronavirus is a single family within the whole group of viruses that we have worldwide. There are about 30 or at least 30 different species of coronaviruses, including, of course, the new one, SARS coronavirus, MERS coronavirus, and then a lot of other viruses that can infect humans and animals.
Are they all potentially lethal, or do they have a wide range of impact on humans?
Yeah, very wide range. So there are some other human coronaviruses that recently just cause something like the common cold. Mm-hmm. So really very mild.
Are these viruses, or I guess let's focus on this current one now. Is this something that we think jumped from some animal, a non-human animal population to humans?
Yeah, non-human animal. Very good. I'm at the veterinary school, so I'm lucky that you did that. Yes, that is exactly what we think happened. The Chinese scientists have done a tremendous amount of research already. It's incredible. And they already know the whole sequence of this virus and know that it's most closely related to a virus that comes from bats. So we're almost certain that it's come from bats, but we think that most likely it went to another animal first, and that's due to its relationship with the wild animal markets in Wuhan, and that's where it first started. And so now they're starting to look for that intermediate host, so a different animal that we think transmitted it to people.
And how does it spread among people?
It's now being spread human to human, so that's definitely now the case. It wasn't definite in the beginning. And most likely, it's only people that have severe disease, really severe respiratory illness, coughing, so then it's spread by aerosols.
Talking to Kristen Bernard from UW-Madison, professor of pathobiological sciences, about this coronavirus that is in China, some cases being spotted around the world as well. Kristen, as I understand, people try to measure diseases. They look at how fast it spreads from person to person, then how lethal it is. Like, let's take part one first. What do we know about how quickly this coronavirus spreads?
Yes. Fortunately, it doesn't look like it spreads super quick. There are some variation in different small outbreaks and between different people and different cases. But right now, it looks like about the same as influenza. And the way epidemiologists figure this out is they determine how many cases are infected from that single person. And it looks like about 2 people for every case. And that's not too bad, really, especially for a respiratory illness. About the same as influenza, about the same as was for SARS coronavirus in the 2000s. An example, measles is probably 5 to 10-fold more than that. So we do know viruses that can spread much more quickly.
Now, let's talk about how likely this is to kill people. I did ballpark math just based on the numbers coming out. Here's how many people who had it. Mm-hmm. Here's how many people who died. I kept getting numbers just under 3%. I assume it's more complicated than that, but what do we know?
Yeah, it is more complicated, and those are kind of the back-of-the-napkin type calculations that we've all done, so good job on that. About 3%, but the problem is we don't know. If we look at the serious cases, just the hospitalized cases, maybe it's going to be a little higher than that. And we also don't know at this point who's going to survive or not. So we're still right in the middle of it. It's really difficult to make that accurate calculation.
There may be people who have a mild version of this coronavirus who never come to the attention of a public health system.
Exactly right.
That will skew that percentage downward
more. Absolutely.
What do we know about how to slow the spread of a virus like this?
Yeah, so if it's like the SARS coronavirus, it's really spread by close contacts with somebody who's quite ill. In that case, we want to quarantine anybody that's sick, that's been diagnosed with this virus. You know, prior to that, then we isolate them until we have the results, and then quarantine them. Then the very important that the healthcare workers are using very good precautions and safety to prevent being infected themselves.
It's flu season here in the United States right now, and it sounds like a lot of the personal things we can do if we're worried about coronavirus are the same things we might do if we don't want to catch the flu.
Absolutely. Of course, with the flu, we can be vaccinated. We don't have
a
vaccine
for
this.
Coronavirus.
But absolutely, washing your hands, you know, avoiding touching your face and your mouth after shaking hands with somebody or touching various surfaces in a public place, that's absolutely key for prevention.
Do we ignore something that's kind of like a household word like flu, but maybe, I don't want to say freak out, but get too worried about something because it's new and novel?
Yeah, I think that's human nature to get a little more worried than maybe we should. On the other hand, we don't have, if this were to become a pandemic, which I'm hopeful that it will not, and I think WHO and CDC also, of course, everybody's hopeful, but I think we have good reason to not think that will happen. We don't have any immunity in the population to this virus. So that would make it worse than influenza or something like that, where we do have people that have already been infected. They're immune. People that are vaccinated, they're immune. So there is reason to be more concerned, but not panicked.
Is this a disease where people with maybe some pre-existing conditions, or younger people, older people, people with a history of respiratory illnesses, compromised immune systems, they might be more at risk for this and maybe should be a little faster to seek medical help?
Absolutely. In fact, it looks like mostly the deaths and severe cases are occurring in older people, not in young people. So that's good for the young. And the deaths appear to have mostly occurred with people who have preconditioned illnesses, such as other lung diseases, cardiac issues, diabetes, things like that.
I've heard with some high-profile outbreaks in the past that urgent cares and emergency rooms get clogged with people showing up worried that they have this disease before it's even necessarily here. On the other hand, we, you know, better safe than sorry might be in our heads. Are there messages out there from the healthcare system to people like when they should seek medical help?
Yeah, if you look at the CDC website, they have a very strict definition on who should be suspected to have this. One is having the difficulty breathing, fever, et cetera, so the clinical symptoms like what we expect. But the other is having contact with someone who has been sick or having traveled to an area where there are the outbreak is occurring. So somebody in Wisconsin, in Madison, unless they've been in contact with someone who just came back from Wuhan, then we should think about influenza or even the common cold.
And let's talk about vaccines. You mentioned we do have vaccines for influenza. They do not 100%, but they can make a big difference.
They do make a big difference.
What are the prospects for a vaccine for this particular coronavirus?
Yes, actually, I was listening to a report on NPR, I think, this morning, and that was by Tony Fauci, and he mentioned that the NIH has a vaccine under development right now and expects it to go into safety trials within 3 months. We wouldn't have a FDA-approved vaccine for at least a year. It takes some time to get through the whole process.
Now, what makes the difference between whether a coronavirus like this comes and goes and we don't talk about it anymore versus it becomes something like influenza, where we have this world path, this seasonality of a disease?
Yeah, so we were very fortunate that we were able to stop SARS coronavirus. I keep bringing that up because it is very closely related to that virus. And in that case, we did have human-to-human transmission, but it was about the same as we're seeing with this novel coronavirus. We were able to stop it after the with really good quarantine and public health interventions, and it never came back. We could find it related viruses in animals, but we never saw it in humans again after 17 years. So that one, because we were able to stop that transmission from human to human, we didn't have the good animal reservoir where we were being exposed, we were able to stop it in humans. Something like influenza has been adapted to humans for eons, centuries and centuries and centuries, and it's very difficult then to stop that. It's always going to be in some person, either without any symptoms, and transmitted on to the next person.
Briefly, as we wrap up, a really big picture question. Is there something we can do to make it less likely that diseases will jump that barrier from our animal cousins to us?
Yeah, it's a really good question. In general, it's difficult in this situation because live animal markets are part of the Chinese culture. And, you know, if they had a little bit more barriers as far as gloves, et cetera, perhaps that we could have stopped it there. But that is part of their culture, and I wouldn't say that we need to stop all live animal markets. So that's a difficulty. There's also a related virus that came in from camels. It's called MERS coronavirus, and that spread from camels, and I don't think we're going to stop that transmission either. So I think just knowing where it comes from can help. We can avoid some people that are more at risk to handle those animals. And so I think it's something where we need good public health preparedness. That's more to be prepared rather than think that we're going to be able to stop it.
Kristen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Kristen Bernard is a professor of pathobiological sciences at UW-Madison. She's an expert in viruses that are transmitted between animals and people. We talked to her about the latest developments on the Wuhan coronavirus. The CDC says there are 5 confirmed cases in the U.S., none of them here in Wisconsin.